fist pumping and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills, are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, and happy to get Tony Black in here. We got a full docket for Tony. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I love the way you say my name. It's exciting. And you know what, Steve? Yesterday, I couldn't listen. I was involved in getting the kids back in school after being sick for a week and had to take COVID and flu negative negative test and flu and COVID because they were out for a week, the little girl. And I didn't listen, and now you tell me you had JJ on. JJ was an adventure to ride for. An adventure on many occasions that wound up in the winner's circle. And I can't believe I missed hearing JJ talk. And the other thing is, it was, what, opening day at Delaware?
Well, yeah, that's why. That's why.
How about that bug boy Jeremy Rose? I always call him Little Germ. Little Germ win his first race after about a three-year hiatus. I'm glad to see him back in the saddle. I rode a lot of races with him, and I can remember at Delaware Park when he first walked in the jocks room. I guess it was, well, I forget what year it was. I was riding down there, and you knew right off the bat this kid was going to make it. And I was glad to see him come back in the saddle yesterday and win his first race. I guess it was it the first race in Delaware opening day?
It was, and Niall Seville put him on, and I didn't even mention it as part. I just ran through the winners for the day, and I hadn't really thought much of it. I mean, that I knew that Jeremy was back and was riding, and who I run into now and then because she sells for one of the feed companies is his mom, right? She's with,
yeah.
I think she's with Purina.
Yeah, she is, and what a nice lady. I've had some contact with her over the years, and she loves racing, and she's with Purina and does a good job with Purina. And she's a pleasant woman to talk to, and she can give you some insight into Jeremy. She tells me little secrets about him.
Well, like you, and like you, he was a wrestler. He was a boy, you know, schoolboy wrestler, and a good one, I think. Right? State champ.
Pennsylvania state champ. And I got down on the floor with him at Delaware Park. And let me tell you something. That linoleum floor in the jock's room is nothing like a wrestling mat. But he kind of took it easy on me. It was a few years ago. But I showed him a few things that I know. And I think he was impressed with my some of my wrestling moves. My best move was standing up. It was a Greco-Roman move where you took him down with what we called a pancake. And I couldn't pancake him. And I thought to myself, man, this being on our top and bottom position, you know, it takes away from a lot of the impact to the floor. But if I could have pancaked him, he'd have really been impressed with standing up and taking him down. Couldn't do it. But he's a good wrestler, good rider. He's glad to see him back. Sorry that I missed JJ's time on the air.
Well, you're going to have to, Tony. I'll send you the link because, I threw down a little bit. JJ's he's had some horses run under his name. And I said to him, I said, I said, Joe, Tony's looking to win a couple more yet. And I said, how about you and he hooking up for one more win? And he said, absolutely. He lit up like a Christmas tree.
I'm going to get in touch with him because I have this personal goal to be one of the oldest riders in North America to win a race. I'm 70 years old. And believe me, I won't embarrass myself. If you watch me breathing a horse or on a horse's back, you'll say, you've been riding every day. You know, you look the same because I had that seat, and I was always proud that I had a nice seat on a horse. And to this day, I can still maintain it. So maybe JJ and I will get together. You know, the other thing, it's so refreshing when you have Al Foreman on because he's a guy that's been in the trenches. I can remember being in court with him many years ago. I forget what he was what the problem was, but he was in court and I was there with him and I watched him go through his understanding of racing. He's not just a guy that puts on a suit and knows how to put on a tie and tie a Windsor knot. He could tie a knot in my reins. That's how experienced he is with being on the backside. You know, he really is well-versed and he's a great person to listen to and has a positive influence and it's good if he has any influence on racing. So I enjoy listening to, his commentary when you have him on because you're not just listening to a suit and tie. You're listening to a guy that's been in the trenches and knows the people. So keep up the good work, Mr. Foreman. It's a pleasure listening to you.
Yeah, and certainly Alan's service to the industry, which, is basically 40 years. We touched on it a little bit last week. If anybody missed the segment, we spent about an hour actually with I didn't expect to, but on Thursday before the Alibi Breakfast, Alan traditionally has sat in with me. He's got a very for someone with a legal with the legal expertise, he's got a very good way of just normalizing, the discussion. I mean, yes, the legal terminology works in, and some of the more difficult concepts get kind of bandied about. But I think those of us that don't really know the ins and outs legally, you come away with at least a understanding of the framework of the issues involved.
Yeah, when he explains things, he can explain them to a point where a guy like me with a barely high school education, the only reason I graduated is because I wrestled, but it wasn't because I was academic. So a guy like me can even understand some of the terminology and the confusing terminology that's written by many people and lawyers. He puts it in plain English where a guy like me can even understand it. So it's a pleasure listening to him. And like I said, you're listening to a guy that's been in the trenches and knows the business. Just doesn't know how to tie a wings or not. Like I said, he could tie a knot in my reins when I get up on a horse.
That's pretty funny. I you're making me laugh because I think both Derby and Preakness weekend, I did something. I typically tie a four in hand knot, and that's my preferred knot. But as it happens, for whatever reason, with a couple of shirts that I wore over those the 2 weekends, I went to the half Windsor, which I don't necessarily and certainly never tie a full Windsor. I don't like that big. You know who likes the full Windsor is LP3, Lafitte Pinkai. He's a big full Windsor guy.
Didn't I? I've had it tied a bunch of times, and for some reason, you know, I just can't remember how to do it. So I'm always getting my brother. But my brother can do it because he's a Rutgers graduate, and that's what it takes to be able to tie a Windsor knot. You got to be a college graduate. So I get my brother to do it, and I can make believe I know how to do this, you know. So if I'm up around the Lafitte Pinkai, I'll let him look at my Windsor knot, too. Because I might be, he probably will be at Churchill on July 2nd, because Jocks and Jeans is having their annual benefit at Churchill Downs. From July 2nd, I'm going to go June 30th, 1st, 2nd, and come back to 3rd.
Nice.
I'll be there. And I guarantee you Lafitte will be there. He doesn't miss too many of those benefits, you know, and he's a drawing card. So I'm going to make sure I get my brother to tie the Windsor, and I'll take it off and keep it tied so I can put it back on, flip it over my head, put it back on when we're at the benefit, and I'll show my Windsor to Lafitte. And
but Lafitte Jr., he's always dressed up. Whenever you see him at the track, he's always jacket and tie.
And I guarantee you, if Lafitte, the father, has a tie on, Junior tied it for him. Because he ain't no different than me, Lafitte. If he has a Windsor knot and that tie, I guarantee you Junior tied it for him.
Well, the guy that pulls that off is Seth Merrow. Seth, all of those ties that are in the back seat of Seth's car, they're already tied. He never pulls them out, and he just loosens them, pulls them over his head, and then leaves them in the car so that he can slap it on as needed. He might as well have clip-ons.
Well, now I don't feel so bad, because that's the only way I'll get one at the next benefit. It won't be because I tied it in the hotel room. It'll be because I could slip it over my head.
the one that is from all the years of corporate life, the one thing that I would have to refresh myself on is a full-fledged tying of a bow tie, which is as complex and as difficult as anything you could possibly imagine. I mean, I used to wear them once in a while at Procter & Gamble, but I haven't in years. But I didn't. You know, you fold it over, and then you round, and then you pull it up together, and it's not easy.
That's the next level of difficulty from a
that is next to level exactly tie. Exactly.
Forget it. I'm lost in space. I'd be lucky. That's why I wore a lot of polo pullover shirts with my suit. It wasn't because fashion said you could do that, but I'd wear the pullover shirt, you know, collared pullover shirt with a suit, and you don't need to wear a tie with that, of course. But if you have to wear a tie, I'm lost in space.
Well, here's the perfect segue, Tony, and you also could fold in some of. You're going to have to listen to JJ's visit because you're going to love it, and he talked about Reliable Jeff, and lot of fun.
Jersey bread. I'll never forget the day we win the stake at Garden State Park, and there was one or two claims of foul on and Reliable Jeff. I said, "We're all right, JJ. We're all right." You know, because it was one of those spots where the jock ran up on the inside. But he misjudged how much room was there and how much room was going to be left there. And the room that was left there was well taken away from him well before he got there. It was kind of a misjudgment. And they left the number up. And 50,000 was big money in them days, you know. And it was Garden State Park, and it was under the lights. It was the new Garden State Park. And we had some fun there. Reliable Jeff. I'll never forget some of the horses he had. Yvonne's Delight, Fast Today. You know, some of them were amazing athletes. And J.J. showed me a lot of respect, put me on many of his better steeds, or all his steeds, when we were at the same track at Keystone and Jersey or wherever we were. It was always a pleasure riding for him. Like I said, it was an adventure at times. But it was an adventure on many occasions that wound up in the winner's circle. So it was a very profitable adventure.
Well, yeah, you're going to enjoy it, and we're certainly going to check in with Joe when the ahead of the Del Cap.
You mentioned Carol Cedeno's name, and you know what? Have a lot of respect for her. She was one of them girls. You didn't have to treat her like a girl. Not that I was ever one to be accused of treating a jockey or a jockette. I treated them all. They were jockeys. There's no such thing as a jockette. You're a jockey. And, you know, and on a few occasions, she didn't like my riding. And, you know, there might be some words, but she was never bashful to come back and tell you she didn't like what you did or what were you doing or can you see where you're going. You know, she was like a present-day Julie Crone. In my eyes, when it came to getting a performance out of a horse, maybe did it in a different style. You know, Jolie would drop their heads and let the reins dangle, pick them up and go. And, you know, Julie and I were another on occasion, had some words. I'll never forget when she got on the phone. I guess it was a Gooley or Laurel. And she claimed foul on me and she told the stewards how blind I was. You know, because I wore glasses my whole life, you know. And when somebody ever took my glasses off and put them on, they'd say, how do you ride without them? You know, you're blind. And she told the stewards how blind I was one day, and they claimed foul. And, you know, it was another one of those situations when she claimed foul. She just ran up into a spot that she misjudged how much room was going to be between the fence and the horse when she got there. And they left the number up. But, you know, very capable riders. So many of these girls. I hate to call them girl riders. They're riders. And I had the utmost respect for, you know, like Rochelle Lee, Barbara Jo Rubin, Kathy Kushner, you know, a great equestrian rider, and rode with her. These weren't girl riders. They were riders. And that's it. And I always put that out there first, you know. Jockeyette, that's something, that's a modern-day terminology. You're a jockey. You're not a girl rider, you're a rider. And I had a lot of respect for them because on many occasions, you got to understand, these girls weren't getting handed the ultimate racehorse. They were getting handed sometimes a secondary horse, the horse that had minimal ability, or the guy was maybe just throwing a bone to him just to get him to gallop some horses for him, and who knows why, but they went out there and performed, you know? And then you always think of some of them, you know, they win some of the major races. Like, Julie won the Belmont one year. So, I mean,
yep.
But there was so many of them that they had to perform above and beyond sometimes of what was expected of any rider. Because, like I said, they weren't getting the cream of the crop. They were getting the cream of the crap sometimes. And they weren't getting...
Well, you can't... to me, you cannot stress enough how powerful she is. And I want to see what she is up to in terms of her win total. You know, because she missed, you know, raising... She's got 1,129 wins, and while she had the two kids between like 2008 and 2013, so there was about a 5-year period where, you know, she actually 2012 she had a pretty complete season, 666 mounts, but now she's back to, you know, taking 700 and change and winning 100 races a year. I mean, she is really good.
Has a good feed on her.
Praise her enough.
Know, right, you can't. And, you know, when you look at her, she has a really nice firm feed on the horse, good hands, you know, gets a lot of run out of horses. And that's a terminology that you can't always explain. Or he gets a lot of running. They get a lot of run out of horses. Well, you can't always explain it, but just something that has to do with the way a rider sits, the way their hands are, the way they communicate. you know, the instinct that they have for the animal and what's going on in the race. It's so important. I mean, and she's not a rider that, oh, goes to the stick and just wails. You know, she's a rider that, she pushes, she'll, show it to him, she'll, use it when needed. And, she's a good looking rider. I mean, she does it. And I don't mean that in a way of looks. I mean, she's a rider that's capable. She's a very capable rider. And it's a, you know, you ride around people like that. It's a pleasure to be around them. It's a pleasure to watch them, and it's a pleasure to compete with them, if you can say jockeys take pleasure in competing. Always did, but I took more pleasure when I used somebody, you know. But that's part of the business of being a jockey. What you're out there to do is to take and put your competition at a disadvantage, if need be. You know, if you're not just on a horse that's going to run off and win, what you're trying to do and what the biggest thriller rider can do is where you put the competition, your opposition, at a disadvantage, made them finish up with maybe a handful of horse because you had them in a switch position, you know, in behind horses, or you had them up your ass and pinned them up against the fence, and you knew they maybe had more horse than you. Well, it's a thrill galloping out, especially, you know, galloping out. And, of course, if there is a claim of foul, the number gets left up, it's even a bigger thrill. And I've been fortunate enough to experience those thrills over my years of riding. I've really enjoyed being an athlete. And where else can a 4'11", well, I'm not even 4'11 now, I shrunk another inch, 4'10". Yeah, I got weighed and measured the other day. I got on the scale. The doctor. I told the doctor what I weighed. He said, "Well, when's the last time you've been on a scale?" I said, "Doc, I lived on a scale. I'm telling you, when I look down at myself, I know what I weigh." And I got on the scale, 110. He said, I told him before I got on the scale, 110. He says, "Yeah, you're right, 110." I says, "Yeah, and I used to be 4'11¾", just under 5 foot. I says, "But I'm 4'10". He said, "Well, yeah, you probably know that." I said, "Yeah, I'm 4'10". And I got on a scale of 4'10 when he measured me. And he says, "Geez, you lost an inch and 3/4", you're telling me?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Some of that's because I broke my back when they told me I'd never ride again, and I was riding in 6 months. And some of it's because I'm 70 years old." And his nurse looked at me and said, "You're 70. She said, "I never looked at the chart." I said, "Yeah, I'm 70 years old. I said, "But I guarantee you I can compete body-wise with 40-year-olds. They laughed. But going to a doctor's office is an adventure, especially, you know, I had both kids sick in the last 2 weeks. And then, of course, they were gracious enough to give it to me, and I'm just getting over it. If you can hear a difference in my voice.
A little bit, yeah. You gotta, yeah.
I'm just getting over it. But you know what? You walk into the doctor's office, and the first thing they do is test flu and COVID.
Sure.
You don't get through the door without a flu and COVID swab.
Exactly. I had the same thing the other day before. I had to go in Maryland last week. I had to go get a couple of things, blood work and a COVID swab before that procedure on Tuesday. So I know. Tony, a couple things. I do want to get a Preakness comment in from you, but I want to mention one thing that I just quickly came across with Carol Cedeno when I looked up her total. I forgot this. In 2018, she broke the Delaware Park record for wins on a card. She had 7 winners. You don't win 7 races by accident. And the riders, what's really notable, the riders who had won 6 when she broke that record. Here's the riders. In the 50s, Eldon Nelson won 6 on a card. In the 60s, and of course he came up the 50th anniversary of BBB's win in the Preakness. We've talked about, in fact, Joe Joe's going to be with us again, Joe Clancy. We talked about it 3 weeks ago with him. In the 60s, George Cusimano, whose name came up recently. Cusimano, the late George Cusimano, won six in 68. Greg McCarron in 74. Jimmy Edwards in 84 won six. Joe Rocco in 2011. And your man, Michael McCarthy, Trevor's dad, did it twice, once in 97 and then again in 98. When you break a record of guys like that list, that says a lot.
I tried to get on that list. I won five and couldn't win the sixth one. I did win five.
At Delaware?
At Delaware, yeah. I forget what year it was, but it was five. And I tried to win six, of course, and didn't get on the list. But her winning seven is phenomenal. And, the riders that you mentioned, I mean, world-class riders, could go any place in the country. They rode in Maryland, Delaware, Jersey, Pennsylvania, but they were world-class riders. And, you know, and George's name, Cusimano, came up just a few weeks ago. And I thought to myself, here's the ending of a sad story, because he got his demise was met in a car accident. At Delaware, I believe it was. I think he had a little Opel at the time, one of those sports car Opels. And I forget the exact, it's been so long. But Eldon Nelson, I remember when he came back to Maryland out of retirement. He was at the cattle ranch, and the other day we were talking about that. And he was just a world-class rider. And then, of course, when he rode for Del Caro and won BBB, that was after a comeback retirement. You know, and it was Del Caro, guys like that, the names, you know, it just, I think of these guys and all their names, guys that I rode with or the guys that I rode for, and I think, no wonder I won 5,000 races or more. I was so fortunate to ride around great riders and to ride for really world-class trainers, you know, Del Caro. Won races for him in Maryland or in Jersey, wherever I was at, and he had something, he would... At times we would make contact and he'd throw me on him. You know, but great business. And I've been fortunate enough to rub elbows with some of the fine participants as riders and horsemen in this business. I don't take it for granted.
Well, and Tony, just for those that don't know the story, Cusimano, you're 100% right. He was killed on the grounds of Delaware Park, right? On one of the, you know, on those winding roads.
Tree, I believe.
Just 20,
a tree
26.
Yeah, sad. And such a personable guy, you know. He reminded me, good-looking guy, too. You know, just a good-looking guy, great personality. You know, he was a polished rider. I can remember when he was riding everything for Delp. I guess Delp maybe even had his, maybe Delp
yeah,
had
it
his
was
contract
Delp.
When he was a bun
yeah.
boy. I'm not sure if Delp had his contract, but I don't know. But I know his one mainstay was Buddy Delp, and he looked so polished on a horse. I mean, when you talk about riders can get low and they fold up just fold up on a horse's back, you know, their chest is up against their thighs and knees, and their ass ain't hardly moving, you know, and you're so firm on a horse, and then you can push on them. And he was that kind of rider, not a crazy stick rider or anything like that, but got a lot of run out of horses. You know, like I said, it's hard to define what that means, got a lot of run out of horses. You know, that, well, of course, it means you win a lot of races. But to say exactly why some riders get a lot of run out of horses, is it always because they're on the best horse, or is it because horses respond to them real well? And talking about the Preakness, when we're talking about the Preakness, of course, I was rooting for Epicenter because of Mr. Winchell, the late Mr. Winchell. I root for his son. It's the same color, so I told you all that story. I think I still got the color.
Yep.
But he just plain got outrun, you know? And just plain got outrun. You know, he had a good trip. The winner came around, and early voting went past them and looked over in the latter stages just as a security measure, not in any way taking a cheap shot. When he came over, it was the thing riders do. It's an insurance measure. He's well clear, but he wants to make sure that this horse don't come down the stretch at the center and find a reason to kick in again. You know, sometimes the reason you win a race, two reasons sometimes, when you're the outside horse. Sometimes you win a race because the inside horse doesn't get a full competitive view of you, and he kind of goes lackadaisical to the wire. And then when you come over, there's been a time or two you've been beat where you came over to the horse to make your horse competitive, let's say, and you didn't come over and clear them. You just came over to them. And at times, what you did when you did that was you made that horse that was on the inside that wasn't getting full view of you get competitive, and you might beat you. Every once in a while, you got beat by thinking you're doing the right thing by letting your horse see that horse. But when you're clear, you come over. It's an insurance measure. And just in case I'm clear, just in case this horse gets a second kick, he ain't going to get through on me. Because, you know, the old riders, when we were learning to ride me, you know, it was an embarrassment, and it was to the point of being disrespecting yourself by letting the winner through on the inside. So you always wanted to make them come around. And if you had a horse come through on you and beat you, the harassment back in the jocks room by guys like Chris Rogers or Walter Blum or Bill Passmore or guys like that, what did you do? Have the easy pass lane open? What was that, the easy pass lane? You know, and that's the way they would break them on you, you know? So you made somebody, it was almost so you could avoid being having your balls busted in plain English. You know, you made them come around. But of course, when you make them come around, you better be clear before you drop over. And that horse was well clear. It was just an insurance measure, and he was just making sure that, you know, if something did come where this horse saw me and started wanting to run a little more, I was going to make him come around. He wasn't going to come down the fence and be a rich strike.
Exactly. And it's funny because some people thought that, he was getting out. Well, Jose Ortiz was with us on Tuesday and explained in uncertain terms that he was going out like that in case anybody was trying to rally wide. And then when he saw nobody was coming, when he looked inside, he saw the maroon jacket, and then he came inside. Some people thought, oh, he's weaving. And Jose, everything Jose was doing was with purpose. Tony, before we go, come back to the first couple of jumps. You know, yesterday, there's been a few people that have said, Rosario was passive out of the gate. It does seem that with the rating tactics that they've employed with him, Epicenter, going back to the Louisiana Derby and then in the Kentucky Derby, you do run the risk of taking some of that natural quickness away from the horse. I mean, if the horse thinks, okay, well, we're going to leave here and we're going to find a spot, he doesn't have that same early jump. And the speculation also was that the ground might have come away from him a little bit, and he might not have pushed off as successfully as he could have. But I just was surprised. It sure looked to me like he broke cleanly, and he just couldn't get to that spot. And Joel was not going to wait around to see what was going to happen next. He said, "All right, let's go get the rail." And I don't see any complaint with that approach. I understand why they're upset, why they were upset, and why they were frustrated, Steve Asmussen and the team. But I think, well, like you said at the opening, they got beat on the square.
Yeah, I think they got beat on the square. When I see a trainer's point of view, though, you know, I can understand a trainer's point of view. But you got to understand, sometimes the seed of thought that is planted in a rider's mind is planted by a trainer when you have experience with a horse. When he says, you know, don't forget those; these horses might be running out of there. You know, just don't overuse this horse leaving here. You know, because it might be a hot pace. And that's where sometimes the strategy overrides the instinct. Whenever I try to follow a strategic plan, a lot of times I overpowered what I was feeling instinctually when I had the reins and the bit in this horse's mouth and I'm watching and I'm on him and he's leaving there. And I'm going to ride him according to a strategy, you know, something that I know has worked in the past. I think when it came to the pace of the the Preakness. It was a little on the slower side than what was initially expected, I think. I don't know, you know. Definitely wasn't fractions that were super fractions in the early stages.
No, and not compared, like, compared to the Derby, no.
Derby, no. But he got outrun in the Derby, too, to a large degree, with those fractions. But I think, you know, sometimes you ride a horse prior to a race, and then you look at the race and you say some similar competition, and, you know, I'm going to set this horse in behind horses, you know, break clear, and I'm going to let him settle in behind a little bit, and maybe he settled a little too far behind because the fractions didn't indicate that he maybe had to be that far back, you know. So, you know, I can see the trainer's point of view, like, you should have adjusted. Well, you know what? Sometimes you ride according to strategy instead of according to instinct. And whenever I rode according to strategy, I usually screwed it up, and I was better off riding according to instinct.
I love it. I love it. Well, Tony, those instincts, 5,200 W's in the career, and there's still a few more to go.
Not done yet. 52-12. Don't forget them last 12. Because, you know, a few of those last 12, you know who they were for. Our man.
Well, Chuck.
No, I can't think of it.
You had a few with Chuck.
Chuck. And then, Jesus Christ. I had too many concussions. Winning Image. Winning Image was...
Oh, sure, with Mikey Arrow, you mean. Absolutely,
Mike Arrow,
for Mikey Arrow.
Yeah, jeez, why couldn't I think of... Man, I'm going to tell you what.
Oh, wait till he hears this. Wait till if he's not listening, then his sister is going to let Mikey know you forgot about him. Oh, is he going to be annoyed?
Wait, I'll tell you what.
You're a chicken in a pot.
That's embarrassing. If he wasn't listening or if his sister ain't listening... Don't tell him, Steve. Don't tell him. Don't tell my man, Mikey. I forgot. I remember the horse's
get
name,
back.
But
There's
not
no,
his.
No way.
I remember the horse's name, and I couldn't remember
well,
him.
You know, well, that's because the horse's name was on the checks that you got.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Steve. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks for doing all the hard and good work that you do, and keep guys like Foreman coming on. They're a pleasure to listen to. They let a dummy like me understand the technicalities of the business.
Tony Black, everybody. Tony, love you, and we'll talk next week.
Love you, Steve. Talk next
so
week.
So great.
Bye.
You got it. There he is, the one and only. We'll stay here and head toward the top, and Joe Clancy, as We now know he's not really Joe Clancy anymore. He's OHJ. That when you see him at Saratoga this summer, you give him a big wave and you say, OHJ, big shout out, OHJ, Old Hilltop Joe. Old Hilltop Joe. It's really perfect, actually, for him. It's the perfect moniker, and he's trying to, you know, just because I received the Old Hilltop as well, he's trying to pretend he's giving me the OHS, you know, but that's the Office of Human Services. I can't be Old Hilltop Steve. This is like that discussion with Andy yesterday about, or Tuesday about the name Jack, putting Jack in your horse's name. When you have a nickname and you create that kind of persona, a Joe really helps, right? Right? Oh, what other Joes? There's a couple of not so flattering versions of that, of Joes, but Old Hilltop Joe, it works. Joe can only stay with us till 11, so we got about 20, as soon as he shows up, about 23 minutes with Joe. And, of course, you know, with every passing week, as we get closer, particularly to Belmont, the start of the Saratoga special season, and we'll let Joe we'll actually let Joe. Frankly, where are we? We're in June, almost in June. I don't know how much they're advertising. It's pretty amazing what goes on with the Saratoga Special, but I mean the paper fills right up. So get in touch with Joe and Tom and Sean Clancy. Joe is joining us now, and I'm telling everybody the old fireside story, the tale of OHJ, old Hilltop Joe.
Let me light my pipe and move over to the rocking chair.
Is it a corn cob pipe? Because old Hilltop Joe has to have a corn cob pipe.
Yeah, or one of those real curvy ones, you know, like definitely.
That's a Cavendish. Cavendish doesn't fit. That doesn't fit the image.
Okay, corn cob. All right, I'll see what I can do.
All right,
my wife will be thrilled.
Old Hilltop. Well, this is I guess this will be the before, we had the before conversation. Now this can be the after conversation. And my 3-year reign as the old Hilltop, as the reigning old Hilltop award winner, the longest in history, longer than Jack Whitaker or Jim McKay. I 3 years I've been holding the title. I'm the Joe Lewis. I'm the Joe Lewis of Old Hilltop Award winners.
I love it. So, somebody has to hold that honor, and it's you. Very fitting.
Well, I could not, of course, I couldn't get down to the breakfast talk about nobody regaled me yet with the tales of the breakfast. Things went so fast after Thursday that with Friday and Saturday's action at Pimlico, how was the alibi breakfast as an award recipient?
Oh, it was great as always. As an award recipient, it was a little more stressful than somebody just being there, but especially that award, as you well know. It was great. It was my wife, Sam, and our three kids came, and Uncle Sean, and we had a great time. So it's a great honor, again, as you know, but to sort of stand there and realize that they've chosen you for it is a little overwhelming for sure. And I kept it short and sweet, told a couple little stories about my first Preakness, and which was first Preakness I covered was 1990, Summer Squall, and going back and looking, Wayne Lucas, of course, had a runner in it, and we weren't the only two people who were there in 1990 and 2022, but, we might have been pretty close.
Well, and it does occur to me to ask, and I don't have the lists, they put the list, it's in the media guide, but have you won the David Woods as well, the writing award?
Yes, which to me makes a little more sense because, it's something it's a story you write as opposed to something honoring your career, which sort of makes you back up and take a pause and realize you've been doing it as long as you have. And again, to see your name on the list of those winners, I don't think I've been doing anything as long enough or well enough to be on a list with guys like Jack Whitaker and Jim McKay and, Red Smith and just a crazy list of people, that it just blows you away sometimes when you think about it.
Well, now I have pulled up, because I had a Preakness media guide close at hand here, and this is actually the 2015, so it's missing the 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. But I just realized the old Hilltop Joe, not so impressive, because Sean has won that Woods thing like 5 times.
If we're keeping score, he won 4, I've won 3, Tom Law's got 1, so, you need a newer media guide.
I do, because now they're online. They're no longer printing them, and so you got to print this stuff off the. And I hadn't really looked at this. It's a nice, it's pretty cool. So,
yeah,
4-3.
Cool.
No,
and again, I said it there. I love and really appreciate the Maryland Dragon Club keeps doing this. To recognize the media in both article, photography, and then the career too. I mean, they don't have to, obviously, and. I think it's great, and it is such a connection to the past when you look at the list of people, and it's a good thing for racing, I think, to kind of take a pause and do things like that, no matter who wins.
Well, everything, as I try to celebrate during my week at Pimlico, everything is an homage to the past at Pimlico. It's impossible not to, not to just take it all in. And in fact, I had that visit with, was it Tuesday that Tim Layden was with us? And Tim had a terrific line in the early portion of his recap, which essentially it's essentially said something along the lines that Pimlico has been obstinate in its dotage to not relent.
it's fiercely steadfast, proud. Right? It's still there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very stubborn. Yeah.
Well, some thoughts.
And it goes back. I mean, again, you get a chance to speak to speak a little bit, and Scott Wyckoff made the introduction, and to sort of stand there, and it does make you think of your career, and it just in racing. I grew up in it, as we've talked before. My dad was a trainer in the Mid-Atlantic. The idea of having a Preakness horse was really far fetched. We had one that won the Tessio, and we thought we might get there, but. To be associated with it now is really cool, and to look at again, I got talking before the breakfast with George Ann Hale a little bit, and it was 39 years ago. I was working in my dad's shed row at Timonium the summer before I went to college, so 1983, and George Ann was up the shed row galloping horses for Ann Merriman, and she became vice president of the track, and I ended up being honored with the Old Hilltop Award. So it's kind of neat when you go back that far and start to think of it.
That's amazing. Well, until they have an OHJ stake, they are going to have a big Dreyfus. They got the big Dreyfus stake at Laurel.
Maybe that's next. That was an amazing barn. The Leatherberry String was next to us, and Mike Goswell's horses were on the other side, and his wife, Sally, now is the general manager of Burial Training Center, and a lot of people came out of that barn, but Barn K at Timonium in the summer of 83.
I love it. Well, how about some Preakness weekend aftermath thoughts from you, your perspective?
I mean, it was great racing, and we kind of, you could look at the cards coming in that you thought it was going to be great racing, and I think that's I say it all the time, the depth of horses they put together for these things is really cool, and early voting was a deserving winner, and I thought Jose Ortiz made the move of the race as they sort of turned down the backside, and he just eased up to tighten up that lead that Armagnac had, and he wasn't going to let him get away with anything easy, and you saw early voting sort of just respond and go, okay, yeah, I'll move to your hip and wait, to me that's where he wins the race, and or puts the horse in a position to win the race. Epicenter was game and ran great, and they're going to say what might have been, but that's horse racing, I think. I mean, it's just the way it goes. Horses can run a winning race and lose, and he's done it twice now, unfortunately, on two of the biggest stages we have.
It is notable, and it's one of the things for those that are historians of the Triple Crown at large. There's. Beside Aladar and some people, I think people were hoping that Epicenter was going to run just so he could finish second in the Belmont, Joe.
don't try to sell Steve Asmussen on that strategy.
No. So. No, that's not going to go.
No, I mean, again, and it is such a game of little things. I mean, if Strike almost didn't run in the Derby and wins, yep. And early voting could have run. He had points. He could have run in the Derby, and he probably doesn't run in the Preakness. So I don't know. It's just the game, and you think of all the things that could happen. Early voting gets a stone bruise a week before the race. The Epicenter wins, and everybody's talking about him. And wins with that good of a performance. So again, that's racing. It's easy to say, but that's horse racing.
There's even an easier scenario to envision, and that's Wayne Lucas running Ethereal Road, or even simpler, calling the racing office on Friday at 9:02 and saying Ethereal's a scratch, and the cut line has already been established, and they run 19 in the Derby.
Right. So no, that's the game we play, and I did speak to Steve early in the week there as he was walking back from the track. It must have been Wednesday morning, I think, and you know, we just had a conversation about how well his horse ran in Kentucky, and you know, we both gave the line, you know, he did everything he was supposed to do, and as Steve walked away into the barn, he threw up his hands and said, "Except the win," you know. Just the way it goes.
Well, how about some other the weekend didn't live by Preakness alone. Obviously, the historic Pimlico Special, and here's Claude Ray winning a rare stake that wasn't already on his resume. Then you had a very good Black Eyed Susan winner. I think she's going to forge her way into the picture. You know, the Black Eyed Susan is sometimes thought of as a little second tier with these fillies because you know the big point getters and the winter the winter winners at the ovals are pointing for the Oaks. But I think she's a legit filly going forward. We had good turf. The turf racing was great. I'll ask one question. You can kind of put all this together and package an answer. This regular scenario of the main track on these big weekends being slick and speed-oriented is maddening. And okay, we did get some rain, which contributes to the condition where they seal the track, and even if they unseal it, and even if they get wind and sun and dry, the track dries out. When you seal a track, it takes a couple of days typically to get it back and get it nice and flat, fluffy and even and get the cushion right. But it is just maddening to serious horse players to be confronted by these speed favoring and frequently inside biased racetracks on these big days. It you would think that the tracks and the supers would be aware enough of this that they would do everything in their power to have that track even. And certainly if it's speed favoring on Friday, you gotta have it corrected for Saturday.
Yeah, and the science behind it is beyond me. So, is it a product of, like you mentioned, if you get some rain and you're trying to do things to protect it before, so you don't lose it and have it go the other direction or what? I don't know. And then the other variable to me is, these are the best horses Pimlico has seen collectively, since last year's Preakness cards. And they're the type that can stay on better. So if there is a bias, it's even more pronounced because they're top quality horses. And yeah, I I don't know enough about the science behind it, I've talked to enough and tried to interview enough, track superintendents about the things they do. But I think the pressure's on to have a fair racetrack, and sometimes maybe in trying to protect it with the ceiling and some of the other things, it goes the other way, and I don't know. I mean, I'm like you. All you want is a fair shake for everybody, but the flip side is any horse on the lead at Pimlico Preakness weekend is a pretty serious horse, and they're going to stay on no matter what. And if they've got a little more of advantage of the track going that way, they're going to be even tougher to catch.
Well, first captain, the two main track winners that came from, considerably off the pace. And let's also acknowledge that Epicenter, took advantage and made up significant ground, obviously. The filly did, too, and the filly took the overland route to be fourth. But Ethereal Road and First Captain, their wins, I think, get upgraded a little bit because they ran against that, against the track, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. No, I was impressed with First Captain, and I think that I know they were fairly high on him last summer and having the chance to move on, and maybe he's got himself sorted out and in a good spot to have a pretty good rest of the year. I mean, he was pretty resolute to come and keep coming and raising and running into that to catch that horse in a stretch.
We'll see about Ethereal Road potentially for Belmont. Oh, I've got a couple of things for you. Talk about Joe. I had Trombetta the other day, and he made me go back and look at the conditions. He brought out the fascinating element of the Sir Barton, which I did not realize was a restricted, not just restricted from 3-year-old standpoint, but restricted to non-winners of a sweepstakes. And that was a little bit of a revelation. I never had noticed that before.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm not sure I did either. I mean, you sort of just called it an undercard type of a race that fit, and if it meant Joe, I mean, Mike's been talking about Joe, who he's not named after me as much as I would like to say he is, and I've been telling him since the winter that he's my new favorite horse in the barn. Unfortunately, he stays with the Laurel String, so he hasn't been up here to Fair Hill, but, he could have thought about the Preakness and went to the turf, and Mike's been talking about him potentially as a turf horse for a while, and he's the... Mike's the guy who talks about a turf foot all the time on horses, and he said, I think he's got one, and the way he ran there, he had turf everything and was very determined. And I love to see horses kind of battle back the way he did. He got past basically and then dug in again, it could be a nice 3-year-old turf horse or dirt horse the way he's run. But I think, Mike might like to kind of, not necessarily easier spots, but basically, to stay away from the grade one, 3-year-old dirt races and see what his horse might do on the turf.
Well, and that also gets us to, because I'll fold this in, because I know you appreciate everybody. I think when you come away from Preakness weekend, when you're listening to the local feed and to the track feed, the pleasure of Dave Rodman and what feels so natural when he comes up with something, with something clever and he's got such a distinctive cadence among the race callers, and he had a spectacular weekend. I think everybody came away, that doesn't watch Maryland racing on the regular, and they forget, how terrific Dave Rodman is.
Yeah, he's great, and I hear him more often at Pimlico. Sometimes you get overwhelmed by the noise and don't hear it, but you hear him on the replay, or you hear him when you're there on a normal day at Pimlico or Laurel, and yeah, he's as good as anybody. I mean, he'd stand up nationally. He could call races anywhere. He takes it really seriously. He was in the press box after the races on Saturday, so the Preakness and then the Arabian race, and he was sort of watching replay of the Preakness, and he was critiquing himself a little bit, which was fascinating to watch. I should have thrown in the Preakness there at the end, and things like that. And, so he's a real student of it. It doesn't, it's not like it's automatic. He does the work, which is impressive to me. And yeah, those are long days and in some cases unfamiliar colors and silks on horses and just different things. And, to do it the way he does it, race in, race out, is really good. And it's appreciated in Maryland for sure.
Well, I've got, I know we've only got about 5 minutes with you because you've got a top of the hour obligation, but I do want to slip in while we've got the chance, because I had asked you during the week about a boat trip to out into the Chesapeake, out into the bay, and specifically to St. Michael's. And I had never gone to the Eastern Shore. I've driven through on occasion and taken northern routes to avoid 95. And in fact, Tina and I, when we came back from Virginia last summer, we took that route, and so you just, you know, you get to see, and it looks interesting. But I had never been out on the bay, Joe, and you gave me, you and Alan and Sean all gave me the thumbs up about, because Tina wanted to do something different. And I said, all right, knowing it was, you know, going to be a gorgeous weekend. So we took this Watermark cruise from Annapolis. It's 2 hours to St. Michael's, which, frankly, as the crow flies, doesn't look that far. But it takes you 2 hours to get there and 2 hours to get back. And they give you about 3.5 hours on St. Michael's, which is a cute little town, as the captain described it, basically Annapolis, only smaller, which made me laugh. But you are intimately familiar.
Annapolis isn't that big.
That's right. Well, give everybody a survey of this, Joe, because you can probably do it justice, and because you and the missus are seriously thinking about when OHJ is on the porch, it might be in St. Michael's.
Yeah, I have no idea how serious any of this is, but the idea of living in one of those small towns on the Eastern Shore or somewhere else is appealing, and like you, we've spent a day. We might have spent a night in St. Michael's. I can't really remember, and I've been there a couple other times. They have some oyster festival type things there and stuff like that. That are great times. It's sort of a quintessential little, you know, water town, and it could be similar to probably little towns on Cape Cod or some of the other places. It's just it's got enough to make the town exciting and have things to do, but it's small enough that the pace is slow. And the few times I've been, I've loved it. And there's several other like it down there, Cambridge and Easton and a few other little places. They're off the beaten path. I mean, it is, like you said, it's a long boat ride. It's probably an even longer drive. And when you texted me about whether it was worth the boat ride, and I was like, where are you leaving from? Because from Baltimore, it might take you all day. So, I'm glad it was only Annapolis to St. Michael.
No, it's a considerable boat. The what was it called? It's got a name. It had a female name, and they looked like the capacity is 120 people, and there's an upper deck, and so, you know, you took in a lot of sun. In fact, I blistered up a little bit. Tina turns like dark brown in about 45 minutes. I stroke. I don't tan. So I'm kind of a blistered mess. We had so much fun, and it was just a perfect way to spend the day. And that, you know, and then the other part of the back end of this, and I want to thank Joe Paese got a hold of me because he listened to the replay this morning or to the archive. And I had mentioned, Joe, that when Tina and I have our Haskell Colonial trip in July, I said to her as we were driving back on Sunday, I said, you know, we could, from Virginia, from New Kent, we could go out Norfolk and go to Chincoteague.
Oh,
have
man,
you been?
Yeah. Yes. I've been to Assateague, which is sort of the Maryland part of that peninsula. And there's still, you know, wild horses on the beach and wild pump, whatever you want to call them, horses, ponies. And it's an amazing part of the world. So, yeah, if you can pull that off, it's definitely worth doing.
Well, not only are we going to pull it off, but Joe, who's been on with us as a contest winner, Joe sent me a note this morning, and he said, if you're going to do that, I'll give you, you know, all the lay of the land. They've got a summer home at Chincoteague. He said they've been going there 40 years.
Wow.
And, yeah, so they've got a place, and so I'm really excited. And we're actually not just going to see the wild horses out there on the berm and on the, you know, on the grasses munching on. We're going to see the ponies swim.
Nice.
When they,
wow. No, I've
when
never
they come
that,
across.
But
yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So,
I mean, I love natural places like that. I mean, if you can go, you know, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, those barrier islands or whatever you want to call them, Chincoteague and Assateague. And, you know, there's some places up north like that, you know, in around New England too, but anywhere that's just a little, a little wild, a little off the beaten path. If it's near water, all the better. And if there's some, you know, if heck, if there's some horses to watch, it might feel like work, you know. So, hey, not so bad. I don't think anybody's racing those ponies, but, you know, you never know.
Well, the other revelation I want to slip in, you know, I've been staying in Catonsville probably the last 7 or 8 years, and got to Catonsville Gourmet and Franco's on Frederick Road there in Catonsville, and both were terrific, and I see that Fadley's is going to open a location in Catonsville.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had somebody in the press box talking about one of the guys from California who was talking about he was on his way to Pimlico Saturday and decided he was going to get lunch somewhere and kept looking for Googling best crab cakes, and Fadley's made several lists, so went to Fadley's and made sure he got a crab cake. So it was like a shot put. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's exactly like a shot put.
Well, that's down. Well, he had to go to the market, right? They're only, I think, their only location right now.
On the way. It worked out for him, and did not have to be at Pimlico early, so it worked out. But yeah, if they're opening another one, and that's a little more, you know, easily accessible, I would think they're going to do very well.
Well, no, they're going to open right. I'm sure Catonsville Gourmet is not thrilled because that's a seafood house, but.
No, that little town has kind of really come on too. Catonsville is a cool spot to go.
It's really nice, nice. Caton Bradar talks about her dad running a horse, I guess, at Pimlico years ago, and saw Catonsville, and somehow went either to the high school or went to town and got her a Catonsville T-shirt, which she says she still has. And that she literally wore until it was like threadbare. So it's only a rumor that Catonsville is named for Caton Bradar.
Yeah, it's like me and Joe the horse. You know, I'm going to take credit.
That's right. Well, we'll know the horse is named after you when it's OHJ, when it's Old Hilltop Joe.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Joe Clancy, everybody, and Joe Clancy, 65, and that's 60. The 65 is not when he was born. It's the number of awards he and Sean and Tom Law have won.
No truth to the rumor that it's going to be 165 someday. So, you know, whatever.
I'll take the over. This is horseracing.com, of course, and Saratoga Special, which is not far off now, folks. When we get past
Pimlico. Buy your ads now. How about that?
Exactly. mention At the Races and get no discount,
hat.
But a free Saratoga Special hat. Thank you. All right. That's a deal. Well, and speaking of which, you know what? I've got 6 Merlin Million hats that they were passing out. They wanted us to distribute Merlin Million hats. And so I've got 6 of those for the first 6 people that tweet OHJ, Old Hilltop Joe. For the first 6, I love it. I'm going to make sure. Yesterday we christened Seth Merrow is now Kingfish, and you're OHJ, Old Hilltop Joe. Oh boy, thanks, Joe. This was great.
Thank you. See you soon,
Joe Clancy. Everybody, and again, whenever you see him striding around the racetrack. Just give him a shout. OHJ! OHJ! All right. Send up a tweet. Include both me and Joe. Joe Clancy, 65. And all you have to do is write OHJ. And the first 6, I've got Maryland Million hats for you. All right? Let's take a break. When we come back, Rich Eng will get to Vegas, and I've been unbelievably remiss. We've missed Rich the last few weeks, so I want to catch up with Rich Eng. We'll see how his Preakness Day went, and, of course, his analysis available at BrizNet and RaceDayLasVegas.com. Rich Eng for Pro Pick when we come back at the races. Pat McKenna is going to visit before we wrap up today as well from New York. A bunch of interesting things to catch up on, including Belmont tickets and these cool farm tour idea this summer at Saratoga. You can come for backstretch and for training and for a farm tour on Fridays. So seven opportunities to sign up for that, and Pat will give you details, and we'll find out about any other news and info that's worthwhile from Pat McKenna later. Back after this with Rich Eng.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Pons family's country life and